this week's perek in Pirkei Avos is the second perek. And the second perek in Pirkei Avos, if we look at the end of the perek, you should have the mission in front of you. The last two Mishnayos, Tezvav and Tezayin, maybe we'll focus on the next couple of days. Mishnah Tezvav says as follows: Rabbi Tarfon Omer Hayom Kotzer V'Hamalacha Meruba. The last line on the page: the day is short, and the work is great. There's a lot of things that have to get done. There are a lot of responsibilities. V'Apolim Atzelim. The workers are lazy; they are not always motivated to do what they need to do. V'Aschar Harbe. Even though the potential gains and the reward and the payment in return for what has to get done is really great. Ubal Bayis Dochek. And the Baal Bayis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Mefarshim say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Baal Bayis. He is the one who has the demands. He is the one who has the expectations placed upon us. He asks a lot, but he's also Dochek. Dochek means that there's high expectations. Rashi says at the top of the next page, it says on the Pasuk, V'gisabo Yom V'layla, Pasuk in Yeshua. A person has to learn constantly. There are mitzvahs that a person has to do throughout the course of the day. And even though that's a great expectation, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu anticipates us to live up to it, not everyone always takes advantage of that opportunity and what they are innately capable of doing. And the day is short and a lot to do. Has to be the motivating factor in making sure that we plan ourselves accordingly so that we accomplish what we want to accomplish. I want to expand upon this a little bit. I think I might have mentioned at least a part of this report in the past, but we'll expand a little bit more now that we have a chance to talk about it a little more in depth. In Parshas Toldos, towards the end of the Parsha, you have an exchange between Rivka and Yaakov, where Rivka explains to Yaakov that he has to go and steal the brachos from Esav, as she was told b'nevuah, that was his responsibility in order to make sure that Esav did not receive the bechorah from Yitzchak. And one of the things that Yaakov is nervous about, besides the very fact that he cannot be honest with his father, is that he's concerned that Yitzhak is going to discover him, because Yitzhak will recognize that Yaakov is not Esav, because they feel differently. Their skin is different. Esav is a very hairy individual, and Yaakov is not. So Rivka says, I'm going to give to you, Yaakov, the clothing that Esav usually wears, so that when your father touches you, he'll feel as if it is Yosef. Now, as if it is Esav. Now, the way the Torah describes that, Vatikach Rivka as big day Esav b'nohagadol. Pasuk says that Rivka took the clothing big day Esav b'nohagadol, her big son, her older son, and gave it to her younger son Yaakov. And that formulation is very surprising. What does that mean? She took the clothing of Esav b'nohagadol, her older son, her big son. Let's just think for a moment. First of all, just as far as statistics are concerned, in the world, so you have twins. Yaakov and Esav were twins. The average break in between the first birth and the second birth, when a woman is giving birth to twins, I believe is 17 minutes. Our twins were born, I think, 22 minutes apart, a little bit on the longer side, but usually it's 17 minutes on average. Sometimes it's less. In the case of Esav and Yaakov, we know it was less, because the Torah describes explicitly that Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esav when Esav came out. Right? So it was one after another, right? So it's almost hard to imagine thinking about twins who are born essentially at the same time. Oh, this is my big son and this is my little son. They're born at the same time. They're twins. But if that doesn't bother you, what should bother you even more so is, anyone want to guess how old Esav and Yaakov were at this time? Anyone want to guess? Yaakov and Esav. We know at the beginning of the parsha, when Yaakov is making the Nezir Ad Hashem, the lentil soup, and Esav comes to eat from it, that was the day of the Bar Mitzvah, the Midrash tells us. But at this point, at the end of the story, the end of the parsha told us, they were 60 years old. 60 years old. Esav could have been a grandfather at that point. And she still refers to him as Beno HaGadol. He's my son. He's my big son. My old, you know, people talk about that. You know, they have kids, and some of them are older, some of them are younger, but they're a few years apart. You know, but the baby is the baby, right? Beno HaGadol, 60 years later, she still differentiated them as if one was the big son, one was the little son. Very, very, very unusual. So what's the pshat? So as an aside, I think if you look in the Mayan Beis HaShoeva by Rav Schwab, he explains maybe on a pashat level that what the Torah is explaining to us is Beno HaGadol vis-a-vis Rivka's relationship with her son. He was the greater son. Namely, because we know that Esav excelled much better than anyone else in history in the mitzvah of Kibbutz HaEim. So as far as being a son, he was the big one. He was the best. He was the gadol hador of Kibbutz Ava'im. But that's a chiddush. That's a chiddush in the pshat. But Baal Moshe will offer another suggestion. Baal Moshe will say something very, very poshut. Yes, it was 6 years later. And yes, it was a matter of seconds between when Yaakov was born following Esav. But for Rivka, for the great person that she was, even a matter of seconds, those few moments, had such tremendous power and value that she looked at it as if there was a significant difference. Because even a few seconds is a big difference. It's major because every second counts. Every second has to be utilized and maximized. And even when there's a slight break in the action between Esav and Yaakov, forevermore, the rest of her lifetime, 60 years later, she still viewed that as something that had to be noted, something that was part of her consciousness, that he was the Ben HaGadol, even though it was just a few moments in between. And it's not a surprise. Maybe to give a little more teeth to this vort, if you turn back the clock from Parshas Toldos to Chayisara, the very first time that we meet Rivka, we already see a little bit of this quality and this philosophy in her life. Parenthetically, the Vilna Gaon and Reb Tzadok are famous for noting that if you ever want to understand the deepest meaning and the core interpretation of a word in Tanakh, what you do is you look back at the first time that it appears in Tanakh, and that provides a lot of insight. So here, the first time this character, known as Rivka, appears in Tanakh, her name appears at the end of the Parshas Vayera, but the first time we see her acting and performing any deeds is when Eliezer meets her at the well. Now, we're used to being taught that the most important thing that he saw by Rivka was her chesed, and that's certainly true. And that's what convinced Eliezer that on a Midos level, she was the right person. Of course, there was a sign that he asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu to provide for him, and she did that. But there was other Midos that the Mefarshim point out that you see in the story that put the spotlight on Rivka for the special person that she was. And the Lev Elio, Rav Elio Lapian, at the end of Parshas Chayisara, notes this with the following angle that he takes on the story. If you read carefully the Pesukim about Rivka, so she's drawing the water, and she has her pitcher on her shoulder, and she has to take it down off her shoulder in order to put the water on the trough and be able to feed the camels. So it says, Vatimaher, she quickly, she speedily, with alacrity, Vatored Eskada, she took that pitcher from where she was carrying it and put it down on the floor. It sort of blends into the rest of the story. We take it for granted what the Pasuk is saying. Pasuk says, she quickly took it off her shoulder and put it on the floor. I get it. She was doing it bezrizus. But notice the context where the zrizus is noted. She quickly took it from her shoulder down to the floor. What is the maximum amount of time that it could possibly take for a person who's carrying something over here to put it down? A second? A half a second? Right? So is that where you emphasize speed? When a person's walking from point A to point B, they can walk or they can run. So that's where you emphasize the speed in which they travel and show that they have zrizus and they're quick to do the mitzvah. But when you have something which Sach HaKol could only take a second to begin with, and you then demonstrate there was speed even in that, when there's almost no room to speed it up, now you know you're talking about someone who excels in the Midos Rizos, who excels in appreciating what even a small moment is worth, and how important and what you can do and demonstrate with that brief window in time. So it's not a surprise when you fast forward all these years, when Rivka is now a mother of two, 60 years later after Yaakov and Esav are all grown up, that she doesn't lose sight of the fact. He may have been born a little bit later, but he's Esav, my big son, my older son, Ben HaGadol, because every moment counts. I want to throw in there also, maybe we have a better appreciation of why Rivka and Yitzhak were such a good match for each other. There's a very interesting statement by Rabbeinu Avram ben HaRambam. Let me see if I can share it with you quickly. Okay, you see at the top of the box there, there's a pasuk, Vatera Sara as ben Hagar. Is that what you see? Mitzachek Vatomer LaAvram Gareshes Amazos Vesmina. Okay, this is in Parshas Vayera, where Sarah sees Yishmael starting to grow up, and she's not so happy with the way he's behaving. And she's very concerned that the way he's behaving is going to deter Yitzchak from being the person he's supposed to be as the son of Avraham, because Yishmael is a negative influence, right? So Rabbeinu Avraham ben Aram explains what exactly Sarah was concerned about. And here you have a quotation. Rosa oso mitzachek, umenabo espiv, umatel kederach hanarim, mafriya miderach hashlemos, v'chashal bischabrum Yishmael. She was concerned, looking at what Yishmael did with his free time. Not necessarily good things and productive things. If Yitzchak would grow up with a big brother like Yishmael, bischabrusu Yishmael, if he connects Yishmael and becomes friends with Yishmael, v'yavala bizmano shah bizulas esek b'shlemos shimuchenes lo, and he would end up killing time and wasting time playing games and acting like a regular teenager the way Yishmael was acting, instead of being focused on the things that he needed to grow and perfect himself and become who he was supposed to be, that was a major risk, and that's a major threat. And that's why she says, Avram, you have to kick Yishmael out of the house. Now, it makes a lot of sense, but it's also a pella. Do you know what Rashi says on the pasuk when the Torah describes Yishmael as being mitzachek? He was joking around. He was fooling around. He was acting frivolously. You know what Rashi says? Rashi says he was doing the three cardinal averos, shvichas damim, gila rias, and avodah zarah. That's what is referred to when he's mitzachek. So if I was Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam, why don't you just leave it at that? You want to know why Sarah thought it was a bad influence on Yitzchak? I'll tell you why. Because he was doing the worst possible thing that a Jew could do. And of course you don't want Yitzchak to learn from that. But no, that's not what Sarah was concerned about. First and foremost, what she defined as the negative impact on Yitzchak is that he was going to learn from his older brother to waste time. So if Yitzchak grew up with that influence with Sarah, and he found someone like Rivka, it's no surprise that he was in the right company. Yitzchak had the right wife because they shared this midah, and maybe that's what Eliezer recognized as being so appropriate to match up together with between Yitzchak and Rivka. Let's go weiter. Just to put it in practical terms, it's reminiscent of something which is retold often about Reb Chana Wasserman. Reb Chana Wasserman was a great Talmud of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. He died in World War II. He was executed by the Nazis. There's a famous story behind that. Maybe if we have time, we can discuss it. Appropriate for today. But he was the head. He was Rosh Yeshiva of Baranovich, the Yeshiva in Baranovich in Lithuania. And when he was younger, so thinking about living in that period of history, the way that people would dress, the type of shoes that they would wear in the cold winters, they would wear tall boots, you know, with a million laces, like you see soldiers wear. That was the standard style in those days. And nevertheless, he refused to wear boots like that. Instead, he bought slip-on shoes. Someone asked him why. You know, why don't you just wear the shoes that everybody else wears? So he says, I could not bear to have to every day spend so much time lacing up my boots. Yes, yeah, like, you know, when you rent skates at the skating rink, right? It takes a long time just to lace up. It takes a long time to just lace up and tie them. And every moment was too important to him that he could not sacrifice that time. He said, I'll get a different pair of shoes because I need to dress in a way that I can get to the base manager and not waste all that time just tying my shoes. Again, a cognizance that every moment was so important and could not be wasted. But you don't need to be one of the avos or yimos. You don't need to be a god like Rabbi Chanan to appreciate this. Every single one of us knows the value of even a few moments. I have a riot for you. Every single one of us, when the alarm goes off, our knee-jerk reaction is hit the snooze button. Right? So if your alarm is supposed to go off at 7 o'clock and you hit the snooze button and instead you're going to wake up at 7:04. So why do you hit the snooze button? Because you're tired, right? Oh, so if you sleep another 4 minutes, that's it. Then I'm going to be able to make it through the day. I'm going to be able to power through it. And I'm going to have all the energy I need to be successful. No, if you don't have enough sleep at 7 a.m., you're not going to have enough sleep at 7:04. Nevertheless, we put that value even on those few minutes of sleep because we feel that every second counts and we're not going to squander it. And when you live with Pirkei Avos, Hayom Katzav Amalachim Ruba, you don't waste those 4 minutes. You don't waste a single minute. If you were up all night studying for a midterm and you're cramming it in, you have a big test and you show up a few minutes early to the test and the guy sitting next to you said, I heard from the professor that chapter 4 is going to be a main focus on the test. And you didn't give chapter 4 so much attention. Now you start cramming and you want every single second. The teacher comes into the room and wants to start the test. If you had 5 more minutes to study chapter 4, you'd give anything for that. So when we appreciate the value of the time, when we're put to the test, we know how important it is, and we don't want to waste a second. We have to try to translate that into a bigger picture of Avodas Hashem, to because we know how important the time is, and not to waste it. That has to be our approach to Torah and mitzvos, not to waste a second, because when we start wasting time, when we say, "Oh, I'm just going to take a few minutes off," you got to be careful, because sometimes those few minutes turn into much longer because you don't have the teacher coming to the room saying, "Okay, now's the cutoff. Now that's it. Now there's no more time." This is an important yisod for preparing for Kabbalah Torah, which is what we're doing right now, and which is critical to serve as the framework of contextualizing our Avodas Hashem as we move towards Shavuos. And this is taught to us from the very event of Kabbalah Torah itself. We know the difference between the first set of Luchos and the second set of Luchos. The first set of Luchos, the Torah says, was the Etzba Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, as it were, was the one who carved the Luchos out. The second set of Luchos were done by Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Pasuk says, Hashem gives instructions to Moshe Rabbeinu, Psal Lecha, you should carve out for yourself, we read this every time we get to a fast day, Psal Lecha, Luchos, Karishonim. You have to carve out Luchos just like the first Luchos. So Psal Lecha, Chazal Darshan as Psoles Lecha. The leftovers, the scraps, the Psoles should be yours. In other words, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to carve out the stone tablets with sapphire gems. Whatever's left over from the carving, you get to keep those sapphires. And that was a way to make Moshe Rabbeinu rich, because Moshe Rabbeinu was shortchanged, as it were, when the rest of Klal Yisrael became rich. Klal Yisrael were destined to become rich. Hashem promises Avraham Avinu at the Bris Bar Mitzrayim that when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, they're going to be very wealthy. Where did they get all that wealth from? They got it from the Mitzrim, who gave them gold and silver as they left Mitzrayim. They got it from everything that washed up on shore after Kriyas Yamsuf. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't able to be a part of that. When the Jews were going around to the Egyptians getting gold and silver, Moshe Rabbeinu, Chazal tells, was busy finding the Aron, finding the coffin of Yosef to take it out with him from Mitzrayim. So he never got a chance to become rich. So Hashem says, this is what I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you the leftover scraps after you're done carving out the luchos. Frekar Moshe Feinstein, that's the way you make Moshe Rabbeinu rich. You want to make him rich? Give him a pot of gold. Why do you need to give him scraps? It sounds like I'm just giving him the leftovers. How does that demonstrate the chashivas for Moshe Rabbeinu to make up to him what the other people took advantage of that he wasn't able to get for himself? So Moshe explains, very simple. He was teaching Moshe Rabbeinu and all generations of Jews, and us included, that the way a person carves out the Torah is by carving out time. It's the scraps. It's the 5 minutes here, the 5 minutes there, the time that people usually don't use for anything. They kill. They check their phone again for messages that they've already seen, or to see what other knowledge guide has been updated on someone's Facebook. Those scraps of time, when you have nothing else to do, use those to learn, to say a kapitel tehillim, to say a few psukim, to learn a mishnah. Chaperein every single minute. That's how you're going to succeed. That is Kabbalah Torah. That is Kabbalah Torah. Everyone knows a story in one way or shape or form of Reuven Benges. Reuven Benges made a big Sima Shas, invited all of his friends, and then 2 weeks later invited all of his friends again for another Sima Shas. And they said, the last one was years from one to the next. How come you're already making Sima Shas 2 weeks later? The answer is, that was my regular Sima Shas according to my usual Seder Aliman. This is a Sima Shas of the Gemaras that I learned while waiting for a bus, while sitting at a wedding and there's some downtime. It also adds up. And I was able to finish Shas by doing that alone. And he said, now I'm going to celebrate that as well. There's so much to take advantage of. And the Vilna Gaon in his introduction, in his son's introduction to his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, say that this was the number one Musar that the Vilna Gaon would give his Talmidim. And he was successful in raising a generation of outstanding Talmidei Chacham who were the leaders of Klal Yisrael for generations afterwards, and all the institutions that they created. Talmidim of the Gra, unbelievable. And it was because the Musar that he gave them more than anything else was not to waste time. That is what is necessary to be Matzliach. To take advantage and use and value every second. And of all the things that the Vilna Gaon could have given us Musar for a lot of things, of all the things that he gave Musar primarily about was to not lose out and not miss the boat, not be blind to the value of what we can accomplish even in the little pockets of time that we have. This is the Hayom Katzar of Amalach Ruba, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Dochik. The Mishnah said HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands of us this. This is his expectation. A person has to have projects. The way to do this is to have projects. To have a project, I'm gonna have a pocket Mishnayos. I'm gonna have a pocket Chumash and Rashi, and I'm just gonna keep on going whenever I have a few minutes of time, and not let it get squandered. Keep it in your pocket. Keep it accessible. Keep it open in a tab on your phone. Don't close it. Have a shear that's open in YU Torah, and it bookmarks it for you. And every time I can pick it up and listen for a few more minutes, I'm walking from one place to another in my house. Chop around and use that time. Henry Ford was quoted as saying, "It has been my experience that most people get ahead during the time that others waste." And that's the truth. In Torah, it's also true. That's what separates the men from the boys. I'm not going to share it with you right now. You can Google it, but Mike Bloomberg had a similar saying, which he used to explain and to testify to his success, which was also about taking advantage of the time that other people wasted. In Kelm, in the yeshiva in Kelm, they had 5 minutes siddurim. They would say, okay, we had our morning seder from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., whatever, and now we're going to have a seder from 12 to 12:05. What does it mean, a seder from 12 to 12:05? It was to engender this understanding that if you concretize the value of 5 minutes, then when you're on your own and you have 5 minutes because you're waiting for a train, you're waiting for a bus, waiting for a ride, you'll use those 5 minutes because you've already established the concept. Okay, I have 5 minutes. I'm going to utilize it properly. I'm going to have a project to accomplish in those 5 minutes. And if nothing else, I'll have accomplished the capacity to demonstrate and show myself that I can beat the Yetzer Hara to not miss out on those 5 minutes. And it sticks with you and it grows on you and you do a tremendous amount. Give me a few more minutes. I want to mention a little bit in context. We said before, Bochanan was a paradigm of valuing every moment in the way that he chose the shoes that he decided to wear, because those were the shoes that preserved every free moment that he had access to. And I think we can't look at Rabbi Hanan simply in a vacuum, but understand a little bit about his life, and that'll help shed a little more light on the midah that he so perfected in the way that he dressed even. Let me read to you from a sefer known as Zov Mishva, which is written by Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro, a Talmud of the Brisker Rav in Eretz Yisrael, who's a Rosh Yeshiva of the Ber Yaakov Yeshiva, died about 10 years ago, a yeshiva in the south of Eretz Yisrael. And he studied under Rabbi Hanan himself in Europe. And he writes as follows in his Sefer. He says that he visited Warsaw, and the Talmidim asked Rabbi Hanan, what did he see? What did he see when he was in Warsaw that impressed him most? And he spent some time by the elderly Ger Rebbe, who lived in Warsaw at the time. And first of all, Rabbi Hanan mentioned that he was so blown away by the Ger Rebbe's practice also, like we mentioned in Kelm, of setting aside 5 minute siddurim, because of this great value of time that he had. And that impressed upon Rabbi Hanan how important it was to utilize every second. But here's a story. It'll blow you away, and there's a story for Gedolim, but helps us appreciate a little bit how far this midah extends. When Rabbi Hanan was a younger man, so he learned b'chavrusa and kolel with the Ponovitch Rav. Now, Rav learned together with the Rabbanan in the Kol Kachim that the Chafetz Chaim had established in Radin, in Radin, where the Chafetz Chaim lived. And at the time, Rabbanan did not live in Radin. He lived, his family lived elsewhere, but he would travel for periods of time on his own, and his wife and his kids would stay behind while he was learning about the Chafetz Chaim. So one day he was learning Kachim, was learning the sugya of Yeshna Shchita Matchil Vatzov together with the Ponovitch Rav, unbelievable chavrusa. Wish I could be a fly on the wall in that chavrusa. And in the middle of their learning, someone came to Rabbi Hanan and gave him a telegram that announced the fact that he had a son. His wife gave birth to a son back home. So he stood up, First thing he did was he made the bracha of Hatova Hametiv, which is what the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch says you make. That's a bracha you make when you hear that son was born. Okay? And when the eighth day after that message came, so he went to his Rebbe, the Chafetz Chaim, and he said, okay, I'm going to go home now for the bris. So Chafetz Chaim asked him sharply, are you a Moel? So he said, no, I'm not a Moel, but I'm going home to be by my son's bris. So Chafetz Chaim said, you should stay here. You should stay in yeshiva. If you're not a Moel, you shouldn't go home. Unbelievable. We begin to appreciate a little bit what the Chafetz Chaim, how he viewed time. It's still Reb Chanan's mitzvah, even if he's not a Moel. He said, don't go home. Even though the distance from Radin to Branovich was just a few hours ride. It's unbelievable. Again, that was the level the Chafetz Chaim was at. So it's not such a surprise that Reb Chanan was able to inculcate within himself, internalize a little bit what the Chafetz Chaim was teaching him about how important every moment was. It's important to add, as Rav Moshe Shmuel continues, that Rav Simcha Wasserman, Rav Chanan's son, would often say that he was very bothered by the fact that people never told the other part of the story. The other part of the story was that the Chafetz Chaim then told Rav Chanan, I want you to send a telegram back to your wife and ask her for permission for you to stay to make sure that she wouldn't be upset if you're not at the bris. So apparently she wasn't, but we missed the point of the story and the midos of the Chafetz Chaim, that he didn't only have this extreme value for every moment of time to tell Rav Chanan not to attend the wedding, but he attend the bris, but he also made sure, b'nei l'chavero, that he wasn't violating his wife's wishes. But we also need to understand a little bit about who the Chafetz Chaim was in order to appreciate where he was coming from. Famous story, just keeping it short, that the Chafetz Chaim had a Talmud, and his name was Rav Naftali Trapp, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Radin when the Chafetz Chaim was there. And Rav Naftali Trapp became deathly ill. And all the Talmudim were davening and doing mitzvot and earning zechuyos to help earn refuah shleima for the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Naftali Trapp, for the Rebbe Rav Naftali Trapp. And they were going around and taking a list from one bachur to the next. Okay, how many days and weeks of your life are you willing to give up to give to Naftali Trapp? And going to different rebbeim, how many days and weeks of your life are you willing to give up in order to give to Naftali Trapp to give him a longer life? And they got to Chafetz Chaim after assembling this whole list and accumulated time of all the different things that people were going to contribute. Chafetz Chaim said, okay, they came to Chafetz Chaim and said, okay, Rebbe, how much are you going to give up for Reb Naftali? And he thought about it. He thought about some more. And after a little while of contemplating, he said, 5 minutes. And they said, what? Chafetz Chaim, that's all you can give to Reb Naftali? You can only give him 5 minutes? And he looked at them and he said, if you knew the value of those 5 minutes, if you appreciated what every second was, you wouldn't be giving up so much time in your life. And this isn't the way to do it. This isn't the way in which you earn refuah shleima for someone. Don't give up time of your life. Unbelievable story. Even though that seems mind-blowing, I'll give you one final story that I think contextualizes this for us and gives us a practical lesson how we should approach our time. Besides what I mentioned before, creating projects, which both sides, this is the time. We have so much more free time than we've ever had before. Even davening takes less time than it did before because we don't have all the trappings of a minion. Use that time. Don't give it up. Don't squander it. Make projects for yourself. But here's a way to drive it home. I'm going to give you you can read it inside together here. This is also from that same Sefer, Zohar Mishva. V'shamati mir b'sholom shvadron zatzal. Moshe Shmuel heard from Shalom Shvadron, who is the Magid, the famous Magid of Yerushalayim, that you know from Rabbi Krohn's books, the Magid speaks around the Magid's table, and so forth. Sheshama mir rabbi panovich zatzal, shalom ad yachin rabbi chanan zatzal. Another story of Rabbi Chanan and the panovich rav together. Pam hutzuk l'sefer v'rosh avachavetz chayim v'viyo b'shar tzien. They're once missing a sefer. They want to look something up, see it inside, and they didn't have the sefer, but they realized, you know, the Chafetz Chaim himself in his sefer, Shar Tzion, which is the portion on the bottom of the page of Mishnah Berurah, where he makes his citations and his footnotes, he said, oh, we see this quote about the Chafetz Chaim, he must have the sefer. So they went to his house. Unbelievable. They got up and they walked down the block to his house. Ha'ochu shneim l'Chafetz Chaim, l'vakish is a sefer. Shepasuk l'mazadelas, od b'yosem b'chutz, shalom l'atar z'bo'am. They were standing at the door before they even went inside. The Chafetz Chaim said, "What brings you here?" And they said, "We came here to borrow the sefer." Chafetz Chaim said, "I don't own the sefer. Sorry, I can't help you." So Tamo, they were shocked. You quoted in your sefer, so how come you don't own the sefer? He said, "When I needed it, I borrowed from someone else. I gave it back." Then the Chafetz Chaim turned around and he looked at his svarim. The Nenach, and he sighed. Shol Rabbi Chanan, Rabbi Nenach, al she'in lo a sefer. Chanan said, is the Rebbe signed because he doesn't own the sefer? Is that what's bothering you, Rebbe? Amar lo Chafetz Chaim, lo. El heineni mestaka be'emes ha'ilo tzorech b'chol svarim she'ish li. He was sighing because he said, you know what, I don't even know if I need all the svarim that I have. I don't have them all. I don't have that many. He had 30 or 40 svarim altogether. But he said, I don't even know if I needed all those. Because every sefer that I bought costs money. And money is time. Chafetz Chaim used to say, in America, they say time is money. But I say, money is time. Anything that I own, including my svarim, took away time for me to earn that money in order to be able to buy it. And maybe it wasn't necessary for me to do that. This was 30, 40 svarim. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, he didn't have a whole shas in his house. When he needed a gemara, he sent someone to bring it for him. Because every second counted so much. Every second counted so much. Sometimes we can look around our house and don't regret the svarim you bought. Don't regret the svarim you bought. But look around your house and see if there's other things that maybe you had to sacrifice time to earn the money to get that piece of gashmius, materialism. Was it really worth it? What could you have been doing instead of that? Chafetz Chaim had the value of time. We have that time now to utilize, and during our life, we have to make that shikul hadas. We have to make that decision and think and weigh things out carefully and very thoughtfully. Is the time we're giving up now, is it worth it? And is the return really important in the long run for the rest of my existence? And when we have those pockets of time, to use that wisely and not kill it. Please don't kill time, because you can become a gon by using that time wisely. Chazer, have Mishnayos, have Seik Tehillim, Psukim, whatever you accomplish, it is unbelievable. Unbelievable. You can't even... last story, Mamish. Someone once asked Chafetz Chaim if they could give up the schus of their tefillin in the morning for someone else's Shavuot Shleim. And Chafetz Chaim said no. He said, if you walk into a store and buy candy and you hand the guy behind the counter $1 million bill, so he's not going to take it from you. He said, I can't give you change for $1 million bill. He said, trading in your tefillin for a Shavuot Shleim is like giving Kosh Baruch Hu $1 million. He's not going to give it to you because there's too much change. The value is so great, it doesn't work. Every second of learning, Talmud Torah, Knei Kulam, Rabosai. Don't give it up.
How do you do this in a practical way that doesn't become excessive and doesn't become too much to handle? So as I mentioned, these are stories of Gedolim. Stories of Gedolim to the extent the person can reach. But they're two practical points. But they both stem from being thoughtful, which is all that's what all of Yiddishkeit comes down to. Not to waste time without thinking, is this worth it? Is this worth it? Whatever I'm about to sit down to do that's not productive, do I have a control in place that's going to make sure that the one video I'm watching on YouTube is not going to turn into 25 videos and I'm going to look back 3 hours later, right? Meaning it's not being obsessive to ensure that your downtime, which is healthy and necessary, isn't properly framed and the limitations are in place. That's number one. So number one, making sure that your downtime is within reason. And everyone can do that. Everyone can do that. Put a screen time. Find ways of creating boundaries. And number two is what I mentioned earlier, create projects. Create projects that are easy to pick up and put down, whether it be a shiur with a bookmark in it, or a mishnah, or a pasuk, or tehillim. Have a tehillim in your pocket, or on your phone. And just pick up wherever you left off last time. So if I have 5 minutes, I'm waiting. Dinner's gonna be ready in 5 minutes. What am I doing now? Check my phone again? What, is it really gonna make a difference in my life? Say 5 minutes of Tehillim and have in mind the 6 million Kedoshim. Have in mind the people who are sick in the hospital. Give framework and structure and purpose. And I'm telling you this really, you will finish the entire Sefer Tehillim in a few days. I'm just finding those few pockets of time and utilize them. You will finish Shas Mishnayos. Ask Meir. You'll finish Shas Mishnayos by waiting for the Chazan to begin Chazor HaShatz. Those are two very practical pieces of advice, and you won't go crazy.